All right, Ellis, thanks for joining us. I guess first question, running for the BC leadership, that's kind of a big deal, especially out in the Northwest for two-term MLA, but I mean, that first term was pretty short. I got to ask, why are you running now, and what's the reaction from your supporters?
Why I'm running now is because my background previous to this job was about economic development and balancing it with environmental issues. And so my background is basically helping build the economy, mm-hmm. whether it be major projects or minor projects or tourism. I've reviewed hundreds of projects, and I could see, you know, how it fit in terms of the fabric of BC's economy as well as our society. And I just think I've learned enough now about the legislature and the politics to understand that we need to rebuild BC when we come out of COVID. And that's basically my background.
Now, a lot of people are looking to rebuild BC. Of course, you have a thing or two to say about politics and the way it's done. How are you different, and how is that going to help?
Well, I'm more about getting real things done, not just talking about it. Not just making promises, because and taking concepts and making reality out of them. And LNG was just one example. And in terms of LNG, we're leading the province, if not Canada, in terms of building our own economy. Forestry was another one that I was a part of 12, 13 years ago when we helped create peace in the woods in terms of First Nations interests and disputes. And that's only a short list of kind of the projects that I've been involved in. I was part of the team that actually helped review the modernization of Rio Tinto Alcan's aluminum plant in Kitimat. And you can't help but look at some of these projects and understand its connection to the economy, whether it be local, regional, or international.
Now, you mentioned a few things there. I mean, the economy of Kitimat, a big project, LNG, is going in. You also mentioned working with First Nations when it comes to forestry. Connecting the dots here is kind of obvious. The biggest deal in Canada, never mind BC or Northwest BC, just before COVID hit, were those protests in supporting hereditary chiefs of the Wet'suwet'en. Now, of course, all the First Nations along the route have signed on. I've heard for different reasons, never on the record, but of course, how would you reconcile this? I mean, you were a former chief yourself with the Haisla. Can you just explain how you can kind of bring these realities of people that are so opposed to something and are willing to stand in the way of something being built? Because that pipeline is being built, but it hasn't reached the point where it's going to come to a head here. How are we going to get to that point where we can actually finish that pipeline, or at least reconcile with the people that are so opposed to it?
Well, the reconciliation in terms of case law and on paper was achieved. I mean, it wasn't really government that were actually trying to decide who represented the people. I mean, rights and title, we're talking about rights and title that has to be reconciled. Rights and title is actually held on behalf of communities. Rights and title, according to what I read over the years, can't be held by individuals. You know, it's held on behalf of a group of people, whether it be they be a collective or maybe they partner up on something. But the reconciliation has been thrown around so much and used for so many different purposes, everybody forgot what the original intention was when it was actually first mentioned in case law. And so if we go back that roadmap of the Aboriginal Rights and Title case law that actually brought peace in the woods, I mean, I don't think everybody remembers all the protests in that respect when forestry was getting shut down. Well, it's Aboriginal Rights and Title case law that helped solve that. It was Aboriginal Rights and Title case law that actually got us to all those First Nation communities signing on to LNG. And there's a lot of these projects all around BC that were based on the principle of case law. And it's kind of sad that provincial government, federal government decided to kind of throw that roadmap away and try to take a different political route. And it's causing confusion. So I think that roadmap, we should revisit that roadmap and try to understand, you know, some of the issues that these communities are facing internally.
But this pipeline is being built now. Is there a way that that can be done quickly enough?
You'll have to talk to LNG Canada about that and to the provincial government and the federal government, because currently the federal government and provincial government are trying to do something that has never been done before, and that's they're trying to define title with one group of people without including their community members or without including their elected members. I don't know if that's ever been done in today's day and age, but I'm quite curious about what's on the table that will affect the rest of British Columbians, what's on the table that will affect other First Nations, and what's on the table that will affect the future of BC, because politics and case law don't mix. They just don't mix.
Yeah, it's a tough one. And you're talking about the future there, BC's place in Canada and the world, kind of related to LNG, because it's making it really difficult for BC to meet its climate targets. Where do you see BC's, what its role is and how it gets there in not just Canada, but the world as a climate leader?
Well, you know what, Canada and BC in terms of the environment has done a pretty good job up to date. And we got to stop beating up British Columbians over this. This is my background. Originally, when I got involved with my council, I opposed all resource projects because I still today have a firm commitment to the environment. But I did understand at the request of my fellow councillors that I had to look at social issues. Mm-hmm. And looking at the poverty rates, the suicide rates, the unemployment, the amount of Aboriginals going to prison, the amount of Aboriginals sending their children into government care, I understood I had to find that balance. But for every First Nation council in BC, that's the first thing that hits your table. And a lot of companies make this mistake when they come to your table. They think that the first question they have to answer is revenues and jobs. That is not the first question. The first question you got to address is environment. And I think that a lot of that has got to do with global warming. That's got to do with land impacts, air impacts. And BC was on a good road in terms of transitioning. They were on a good road to going to energy sources that didn't emit as much emissions. And I think that we should do this. We should do this across the board in terms of where all that emissions is coming from across BC, whether it be on reserve or not.
So my understanding is the first thing that should be dealt with, or at least top of mind, is the environment. But those jobs, you've made that connection. They are so important to all the social issues. Many of those social issues you talked about, addiction, just, you know, poverty, a sort of desperation that is there. And now, can you connect these jobs, these opportunities in a long-term way as Premier, because this is what you're running for, right? In the long term, as Premier BC, what would you do different? And you said you're not just a talker, you're a doer. You have, you know, you make things happen. What are you going to make happen here for those people that are in those kind of positions?
Well, development. But you know what? I'd like to go back to the question before, because the balance is important. And I've always considered the word global warming. And it was an issue for me in thinking about, and it was actually brought to my table early in my career in terms of what's happening in other countries. And when you're talking about the globe, I think we have to take this into consideration when we're talking of emissions coming from India, China, Russia, United States. And in respect to where Canada's heading, I mean, we're not perfect, of course, but we've come a long way. And we can do better, and I can see organizations doing better. And, you know, I think we should follow suit on the transition of, say, what the private sector is doing. And we should follow suit in terms of what they're doing for converting tankers to LNG instead of bunker fuel. There's mining companies that are actually using the LNG for their generation of electricity. That's just a start. And now the clean energy movement that's coming back, but is concerned about Site C production, I mean, there's a place for them. It's specifically geothermal. But, you know, and there's ways that we can make this a lot more fluid as well. We can clean up some of the regulations and red tape for geothermal opportunities, because I can't see why we put so much bureaucratic processes in front of something as clean as geothermal for electricity or heat or cooling. I don't see that. And if we're going to do this, we can actually get all our remote communities the switch from burning diesel to the electricity, we can get them to switch to LNG. We can actually encourage them for geothermal opportunities. We can encourage them for wind, run of the river, you name it. But I don't think our system is built in a way to actually achieve that. Our system is still built on systems built from 20 years ago. And this is a new day and age. I mean, we do such a good job in recycling. We do such a good job in terms of forcing corporations to think better about maybe converting their semi-tractor trailer trucks to hybrid electric LNG vehicles. We do a good job, so why don't we just double down and just keep pushing that direction? Keep doing it. It makes sense to me because I think it will also help drive the economy.
Now, those are big ideas. Those are things that seem to make sense. Geothermal, run of the river. Is the solution, because now we're getting to what party you belong to, you're the BC Liberal candidate for leadership here, is the solution deregulation in that area?
Well, in terms of deregulation, I think it's more about just make it more fair and more efficient for somebody that wants to go explore for geothermal opportunities. And it was pointed out to me that if a company wants to come and explore in terms of drilling for oil or gas, you know, they fill out the paperwork and then they're given the permission to go explore. Just explore. That's all I'm talking about. But a geothermal company wants to go in and they want to do exploring by drilling. You know, they go through a different process and there's no real rationale given to them or why they can or can't drill. I mean, I know there's considerations we have to think about. I know we have to consider groundwater. But if there's nothing around, like take the terrace industrial development lands here. The local band here, who's at stage five of trade negotiations, got permits for the drilling for geothermal exploration under the Standing Offer Program, BC Hydro. They got their permits. And then this government cancels the Standing Offer Program. And now they've got basically useless permits. So all they want now is, can we convert those permits to an order in council so that we can switch our project from generating electricity to generating oil, heat and cooling for some of the projects proposed for our lands? And there's no real process for this. And I don't understand it. If BC really wants to get to zero emissions, then you've got to clean up your regulatory scheme. You've got to make it easier for these guys. You can't let them go for, you know, a year or two just trying to plead for a permit, spending all that money, you know, spending all that investment in all these meetings, and then only finding out that maybe if the minister's in a mood, good mood today, maybe he'll approve it. That's not fair. That's not right.
It is quite the system, and it sounds like a hard sell, though. I guess my point there is, how do you convince people in British Columbia that they got to get more interested in permit process?
Well, that's my job. And you know what? It's not just in Terrace. I mean, there's places in BC, like say outside Valemount, that have huge airshed quality issues. There's just too much wood burning. It all kind of stays in the valley. And they've been pushing for geothermal. They can't get it. And there doesn't seem to be any real justification for why they can't get it. This just does not make sense to me. And this is what I'm talking about when I'm saying, you know what, I'm not much of a talker. I'm more of a doer. I mean, why is it that maybe it's just not, doesn't make the headlines? Mm-hmm. But that should be a reason why you don't let a place like this outside, it doesn't need to be a reason. I think British Columbians, citizens, they want to see proof that, you know, incremental, great. If it's small, if it's measured, great. But we want to see proof that we're actually doing things to lessen emissions. It could be, it doesn't have to be the grand, big plan. You know, we can do it spots all across BC, you know, that show that, yes, we are making an effort. And geothermal, great. Let's do it. Because it's a local initiative that provides a service to a local community. It's not like they want to tap into the BC hydro grid and sell power to the United States. Nothing that extravagant. They're just trying to fix something as simple as airshed quality. The one in Terrace is just simply wanting to kind of direct their heat and cooling energy to a local initiative, business. And this goes across the board for bioenergy projects. If the BC people really want this, then government, you've got to make a more efficient process for us, because, you know, the more time we waste here, you know, the less investment comes in. You know, we've got to encourage investment.
Yeah, that's an opportunity. I guess there's a bit of a message of get the government out of the way a little bit, or at least make that process easier. I had one more question for you, Ellis, before I can let you go. There is kind of an issue within the BC Liberal Party of this, you know, it's a coalition party. It was formed a long time ago to kind of combine these liberal-minded people and conservative-minded people into a pro-free market, but socially conscious kind of entity. But now there's, like everywhere in the world, there's kind of this, disunification. Do you have a plan for the BC Liberals, if you were to become leader, to unite again the party under one vision that everyone can get behind? Because these things make sense, but there's also that ideological thing that I know you said you try to stay away from, but I guess you're going to be thrown right in the middle of it if you're the leader, right?
Yeah, and you know what? I've already said before that I haven't really put much thought into it. There's a lot more people that can understand how to do that. And then, you know what? I'll have those conversations and move on. My number one priority right now is the same priority when I was chief counselor. And that's basically, how do we build this place to be a good place for all of us? I mean, I don't really care whether you're an NDP or a conservative or a BC Liberal or whatever, or a Greenie. I don't care, because if you can't see a future for yourself, and if you can't see a future for your kids or your grandkids, then we have a problem. Because BC, you know, for all the complaining that might be out there, BC is actually a pretty good place to live. And me as an Aboriginal person, you know, the mentality should be that I should be battling BC and I should kind of have some kind of animosity. Well, I don't. I actually appreciate BC. And coming out of COVID, even before going into COVID, you know, I have a strong opinion in terms of where BC should be heading. I mean, for such an environmentally conscious province like this, like BC, and then watching our economy basically go nowhere, that's pretty upsetting to me. It's something that I took out of my chief counselorship and saying, we got to build something for the people so our grandkids have jobs and they can build houses and we can locate, we make our community stronger. I take that same philosophy to BC. And it doesn't matter to me your gender, your religion, your political views. It doesn't matter to me. We all, at the end of the day, want to be happy. We want to have a house, a family. We want to be able to enjoy life, enjoy our freedoms. We want to all do this. So this is the perspective I'm taking, that if I'm going to do this, I'll think more first about BC and what it means to me, what it means to my community, what it means to people in Vancouver or Fort St. John. I'll take that first, and then I'll let people smarter than me think about how we keep our party unified.
That's a great message to leave on there, Ellis. I appreciate it. I appreciate your time. Thank you for giving it to me. We'll follow you on the campaign trail, and congrats on being the first one to jump into the pool, as it were. I guess you got a year to, or just less than a year, to figure things out and see what happens.
All right. Well, you take care, Chris.
You too. Thanks, Ellis. Bye.
Bye.